from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Figgy just poked his head in the studio here. Figgy's co-hosting with John Lopez this week on In the Loop. So that'll be fun, starting at 10 a.m. today. But I don't know if you saw, Seth, on the induction ceremony, when they showed Cal and Hannah McNair, Figgy sitting 3 feet away from them on camera. That was good stuff, man. Figgy.
He was in a lot of the still photos that I saw on Twitter, too. Figgy's a man. Figgy shows up. Figgy's in all the right spots at all the remote. He's a hustler, man.
He is. He's a man about town. He's
a man about Canton.
He is a man about
Canton. I need to send him up to the city council meeting. The local public safety officials are the ones that canceled that game. Joe Buck, I noticed it when I was rewatching it at the end, that Joe Buck says, with NFL officials and local city officials decided to cancel the game. Listen, Canton, it's the one thing good that happens in your city all year.
Right.
I'm gonna take my 3 minutes of podium time at the city council meeting.
Yeah, man.
By proxy, I'm gonna send Figgy to do it.
You can't push around big football, okay? Stop it, city council in Canton. All right, speaking of the Hall of Fame game, you on Friday, Seth, were far less bullish on the performance of Davis Mills than most were. I think it's fair to say, right?
I was like, everybody settle the hell down.
That's right.
A couple series, and there were some bad plays in there. So, and at that point, I had rewatched the game just briefly, gone through. You know, I hadn't had time to stop, and it was 6 a.m., damn it.
Right.
And I hadn't had time to kind of stop and look at individuals all that much. I went back and watched Davis Mills specifically right after the show, and I thought, oh, I've made a grave mistake. I should have given him way more credit for that performance than I did. And I will still say it's a small sample size, but the mistakes that he did make, I think I hammered him too much for them because of, you know, the old confirmation bias where I got this view in my head of Mills. So anything that supports my view, I was really going to latch on to it. I think the biggest mistakes that he made in that game were, one, just the throw that he made to Skowronek, where I think it was a matter of he needs to make the decision earlier in the down there. He kind of stretched that play out longer than he needed to. At the end of the day, it wasn't as egregious, though, as I thought. I mean, he was trying to put the ball in the hands of the athlete, which is chronic, even though Davis Mills can run. And also, you know, I guess Aikman afterwards said he could have run for an easy 5 yards or so. I think that he was probably – Mills was thinking the same thing about Skronik. It just wasn't well-placed, and the timing was just way off.
Yeah, it just looked super sloppy.
The one point, too, once Mills didn't throw it to him earlier in the down, I'm thinking Skronik probably should have turned upfield.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was kind of the fact that he was in the body position, he wasn't – so whatever. Not turned upfield – completely, but just turned his shoulders the other direction. So I thought overall the biggest thing was a lot of the smaller things. Just they had pre-snap motion on just about every pass play in that first series, which doesn't sound like a big thing, but that's the way this offense is executed. You know, like the simplified version is we got to stop using all this pre-snap motion. But they were utilizing the pre-snaps motion, and then even on a couple of his errant throws, he was going exactly where he should have with the ball. There was very much, it was in time and in rhythm. And then there were a couple times where he had to go to his second or third read that I thought he did a really good job, like on the touchdown throw to Katoriano. I think a previous version of Davis Mills may have tried to force that throw to his first read, because I think it was a tight end that would have been his first read, like was open for a bit, but just had somebody about to drape himself over him, and he turned to look for Katoriano, yeah. And he was wide open. Not wide open, but, you know, he was open for the pass. I think the thing that I still hold a little bit in reserve is I still do wonder if there's a little bit of indecision to his game. First, that play with Skronik. Second was the ball that he sailed on what would have been a throw to Steven Sims. I don't know if I can even call Steven Sims a target, because it went so... Joe Buck is like, that almost went the other way. And I'm like, I didn't almost go to anywhere except maybe the third row.
Right.
That's giving him credit, saying that could have been an interception.
Yeah.
I wonder if he maybe double-clutched the ball a little bit as he realized that it was going to be a tighter window for Steven Sims than he thought. So when he faces good defenses with starters, that's still a little bit of an uncertainty for me. But... that's not the game we watched. The game we watched, he had a really nice performance, and he executed the offense.
Yeah.
First and foremost, you want your backup quarterback to execute the offense.
That was a big thing for me in rewatching him. Like, his command looks pretty good. Like, the plays he had that were ugly were ugly. Like,
yeah.
But there weren't that many of them, you know what I mean? Like, I thought his command, especially for a backup, was pretty good. All right, so Mills, better than you had initially thought late last week. What else did you like? What else is good? What else can I get excited about?
Look, again, you know, talking about, hey, you're facing backups out there. All right, well, Blake Fisher has been starting at all camp because Laremy Tunsil is injured, still coming back from his injury. So he's, for now, the starter at left tackle. Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs were out there. They're your presumptive starters. Like, let's say if Laremy Tunsil didn't come back, those are your presumptive starters day one. I did what starters should do. I thought they did what starters should do when facing second stringers, is that at times they dominated them, and they did it in the zone run game, at times just showing exactly the level of cohesion and cooperation and timing and everything that they need. So much so that something that we'd forgotten can even happen, we could actually start criticizing actual... running back decisions.
Yeah.
Like Gumbawale, you know, just flat out, just not seeing a clear path in front of him. But Blake Fisher on one play, Baldinger actually pointed out this out in his Baldy breakdowns, did a good job of taking the guy where he wants to go, and the path opens up for the running back. So that part was really encouraging. That at times the center and left guard especially, who definitely, like, those guys look like, handicapping it, they're probably going to be the starters day one.
Yeah.
I thought they did what they should do versus backups. And the pass protection for Mills was really good. The only time Mills really faced adversity from a pass rush perspective was when on that naked boot where the defensive end didn't bite. I'm almost, and that's where I'll bring my third positive in here. I'm not 100% certain that Stover wasn't supposed to stay and block there. Later on in the game, they ran a similar play, and versus a similar look in Stover Stadium and blocked, but whatever. Maybe it was a naked boot. Maybe it wasn't. Stover did some good things. Stover had some nice blocks at times. You know, he definitely has some things he needs to clean up, but I think he shows promise as a blocker. And then, obviously, as a receiver, he had a nice catch. Wasn't anything spectacular or anything. So I'm encouraged by Stover. I think that there's a good chance he gets, you know, some targets this year. I don't know. It all hinges on his blocking and how he holds up there. I just, right now, he's the best option on the team in terms of, like, hey, do they have any tight ends who can really block well?
He's their best blocking tight end right now?
No, I wouldn't say he's their best blocking tight end right now. I'd say he's the guy that's got potential. Because Schultz works at it, but he is what he is when it comes to blocking. Mm-hmm. Brevin Jordan, likewise, he works at it, but he is what it is when it comes to being a blocker. I think there's upside with Stover, and it's just a matter of if he can get really consistent with it.
Was Xavier Hutchinson's day as good on rewatch as it was on original watch for you?
It was even better, and I'll tie the negative and the positive in here together. Hutchinson was very, very good, and I think most importantly, he's just always where he's supposed to be. I think he's an in-game, really good route runner. The negative, I would go to John Metchie, where it's and this is how practice has played out. That I think Metchie has been really impressive in one-on-ones and in 7-on-7 at times, but when it comes to the team stuff, it's just not the same. And I think some of the things that he shows in the one-on-ones, it just does not translate to the field. And it almost looks like backyard football at times. Like, he just doesn't create separation. And when he does, I don't think it's necessarily within the timing of the offense. And in this offense, that doesn't really do any good for the quarterback. So I'm still hopeful that he's still improving, because I do think he looks physically different this year than he had in previous years.
Oh, yeah.
But it didn't translate to the field in that game. We've got D'Amico. Oh, we didn't get that. Never mind.
We've
got D'Amico on.
Yeah,
Metchie.
We got D'Amico.
This is D'Amico on Metchie's performance in the game.
Yeah, Metchie, he showed up during camp just playing really fast, playing decisive, and we've seen that during the first couple of weeks of camp. Just want to continue to see that, you know, in the game. Where the game was yesterday, we'll see how he improves to the next week. And that's a lot of guys, man. It's that first one out. It's all about, okay, this is your starting point. So I don't put a lot into the game. I just put a lot into how guys respond the next time, right? After we make the corrections, we show guys where they have to improve, whether it's, you know, a D-line position, receiver, every position across the board. It's like, how can guys improve upon what they put out there on film on yesterday? So I'm excited to look ahead to this next week and to see how all of our guys improve.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think D'Amico pretty much lays it out right there. There's a difference between practice and the games for Metchie. And some guys all of a sudden a switch will flip for them, and that happens. But the decisiveness, that word keeps coming up, both in what Metchie said in the press conference the other day and what he talked about with Brandon and John, where it's, you know, he says his decisiveness has gotten better. There's something I think with him in scrimmage and game situations where he doesn't have the confidence that he does in one-on-one situations. So I had talked Metchie up a whole bunch. I had a very pleasant and polite disagreement with Cody Stutes about just where he was in the pecking order. But based on that game and history, yeah, right now Hutchinson is way ahead of Metchie in terms of how much you could rely on him.
All right, so the good, Mills, left side of the O-line, and Scruggs, Hutchinson, yeah. Stover, Mechie's a concern. What else do you have?
I'm going to say this. This isn't a specific criticism of the Texans players, but that kickoff is gots to go. It is bad to the point where I want you to listen to this, everybody, and keep in mind that D'Amico is a staunch defender of hard physical football. He wants guys to hit. He relishes the football violence part of the game. This is D'Amico on what he saw from the new kickoff rules.
A lot of violent hits, and I think the 5-yard gap between the guys is tough to, as a kickoff return unit, to get back, to get your feet set, and to actually get a guy blocked. It's tough. So what you saw is a lot of guys running free, you know, And you saw returners running downhill full speed. So you saw a lot more collisions than you've seen, you know, on the kickoff in the past couple of years. So it's tough to block a guy when he's full speed. He's on you at 5 yards. You got to turn around as quickly as possible. What I saw is a lot of guys unimpeded to the returner. Jake Hansen, he beats his block, then he comes off, and, man, he's on the returner very quickly. He ended up coming out of the game.
Yeah, so, like, the way I started that, it almost sounded like he was in favor of it. But, no, like, this is the thing. I think D'Amico's in favor of violent hits when they're good, clean hits. Every one of those hits, I went back and watched them, and they are all awkward. Guys are in weird body positions. Your returner at times, yeah, has guys that are... But even Jake Hansen made a nice play on that game, but he was in an awkward position when he made that tackle, and he gets injured, and he's out of the game. It did not sound, especially when you listen to the longer cut, that D'Amico likes this one bit. And I think anybody observing it that had a vested interest in their own players not getting hurt for stupid reasons. It's one thing if a player gets hurt on a clean football player. This was just dumb stuff. This was a bunch of cars colliding on icy roads where nobody wants it to happen, right. But just you, it's impossible to control yourself.
So one game in with these new rules, this is a way less safe play than the play they're trying to eradicate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The stated goals were to increase the number of kickoffs, make it a relevant play again, but also make it as safe as a normal play from scrimmage. By the eyeball test and by Jake Hansen's injury, and I don't know if any Bears got injured, I would say it was a fail on the second part. In terms of getting competitive kicks, I don't think any of the coaches are going to give a damn about that. I think they're like, this is just a random stupid play where guys are going to get injured for returns that didn't do much for us.
Yeah.
You know, like it was. But unfortunately, the rule is you can't just, if you kick it into the end zone, it's going to be a touchback at the 40. So it's
the 40, if you kick it, I thought if you kicked it through the end zone, it comes out to the 30.
If you kick it through the, if it's a touchback, oh no, if it's a touchback, it goes to the
40. I think it comes to the 40 if it's short of the landing area there.
If it's short of the landing area, if it goes in the end zone, it comes out. So I think they're, yes, okay, thank you. I think they're going to just go back to the old way real
quick. I do too.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Texans just kick it into the end zone.
I'm with you. I've been saying that all training camp. I think there's a chance that once people see how this looks, that teams are just going to go, okay, it used to come out to the 25 and now it comes out to the 30. Cool, here's your 5 yards. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's way better than getting guys hurt.
They'll lobby for the returner, just get rid of it, change it or something. But this is a bad change so far. I mean, maybe teams will figure it out, but everything that D'Amico said, I think, is true. It's just that it's a really, really hard position the return team blockers are in to try to actually successfully block somebody. But then even then, it still ends up being awkward and ugly for the defender, too.
Yeah,
I was more worried for the defenders than I was for the returners in some respects.
It's weird. Who knows? Maybe guys adapt. I think one thing, too, Seth, that I'm pretty confident after one game of this, you know, there was a thought that, hey, it's like a play from scrimmage. Maybe there'll be more of the regulars out there playing. You know, maybe there'll be more starters used on pickup. Yeah. No chance.
What it reminded me of, Sean?
Yeah.
In World War I, when they first started using airplanes in battle, nobody actually really knew how to fly an airplane. Or, more critically, they didn't really know how to train them to fly airplanes either. And there were no simulators or anything. And there were these old tail draggers that are really hard to fly. So basically, they would figure out if guys were good pilots by whether or not they crashed. They would tell them, like, here's what you want to do. Just try to control that cannonball that you got in front of this airplane and don't go into the ground.
Oh my God.
A lot of people died.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy. That's what this is. It's man, it's wild. We'll see. We'll get our second look at it on Friday against the Steelers. What else? Any other concerns coming out of the game for you?
The defensive line and the linebackers, the front seven in general. I'm not as concerned about the defensive line, even though guys versus the run, a lot of the guys didn't fare well, without picking on any one single guy. Like, I'll pick on a single guy and also say some good things about him. Marcus Harris showed something, but there were times where his size hurt him. And most of the time that his size hurt him, it's because he's still got to learn to use his hands really effectively. I thought he'd shown improvement because as a smaller guy, you got to be especially lethal with your hands. And there's times where he's just got to learn exactly what he can and can't do at his body size in the NFL. But I saw some really good things out of him, too, when he could get upfield and penetrate. The linebackers... And, you know, one of the guys that played in that game will be your third starting linebacker in base. I thought as a group, they just showed a lot of last year's issues of not recognizing run or pass on play action. And then so they were being slow to respond to run, or they were overcommitting to the run and getting torched in pass in pass coverage. So they've got to clean that up. I'll be patient with that. But just as a group, one of those guys will be a starter on base downs. They gotta get it together.
Marcus Harris needs a new number. 59 makes him look small. He needs a number that begins with a 7 or a 9. One of those two.
Yeah, for a smaller guy, something in the 70s I think would be best.
Yeah, I think so too.
If you see something in the 90s, well, let's see. What was Dwight Freeney? Was he 50?
No, I think he was a 90 something.
Was he a 90?
Yeah, no, he might 90 have been something. Dwight Freeney. Jersey number. This is going to bother me now, so I got to look it up while we're on the air here. Dwight Freeney
jersey.
Scratch
that itch, bro.
93. He was 93. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So
that's pretty pathetic, given that I'm guessing I saw some Dwight Freeney highlights this weekend. But still,
his speech was good. I liked Dwight Freeney's speech. His speech was good.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, speaking of speeches, let's get to acknowledge me. We acknowledge big performances from the weekend. We acknowledge big performances at large. And we do it. We will recite the name, and then we will play Roman Reigns. Say,
acknowledge me.
By the way, quick acknowledgement of a listener. Rick said that listens to the show, and he said, my kids have been yelling, acknowledge me now because of your segment. We're not even wrestling fans, but we're getting there. Crying laughing emoji. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate you tuning in. That's called cutting through, is what that is. All right, let's get things started on acknowledge me here with our...
I'll end off with this. I'm happy as hell again to be your first Pro Football Hall of Famer. Thank you.
Yeah. Andre Johnson.
Acknowledge me.
We acknowledge the great one. He crushed his Hall of Fame speech. I thought he was great, Seth. I thought the first half of it or so where he was very speech-like and reading off a telestrator was very good telestrator speech, and then the telestrator went out middle of the speech, spoke from the heart, and I thought he was even better after that. He did a great job. I thought he checked all the boxes on that thing, man. He was awesome.
I feel bad for him, though, that if the telestrator went out, I'm guessing there was probably one or two things in the second half of the speech of people he wanted to thank that he didn't get to. And I feel bad if that was the case. But other than that, I personally, selfishly, I really enjoyed the speech. I thought every time he referenced his childhood, and especially when, you know, he told the people from back home that the quiet kid from the neighborhood had made it.
Yeah.
I just thought of all the people that probably worried about him, because you always worry about the quiet kid because you don't know what they're thinking. You don't know if they're upset. You don't know if they're happy, which is why I also liked it that Andre, understanding that people can't often read his emotions, twice told the crowd that he was very, very happy.
Yeah, happy as hell. Happy as
to
hell.
Use the phrase. Yeah. I thought I felt it was almost like a little inside joke for people that know Andre, that you just don't always know exactly what he's feeling.
Yeah, it was really good. Here was Andre talking about the new fraternity that he's part of with the Hall of Fame.
I can't lie. I'm happy as hell. I've reached the pinnacle. To be sitting up here with these guys I idolized, guys I wanted to be like, and now for them to be my teammates. And like Pep said and some of the other guys said, what we miss about the game, it's not playing, it's the locker room. You don't understand the bus rides, the plane rides, being just going out to eat, things of that nature. People don't understand that. And you spend more time with your teammates more than you do with your family.
Now that part people understand. I think the average American spends more time with their coworkers and their family, but there is that, and I can't relate to this, you can, Seth, that fraternity of the locker room. That's the one thing when you ask guys when I've asked guys that are newly retired, I would say 90% of them say the biggest thing they miss are the stuff that we don't get to see as fans.
Yeah, and I think a lot of fans could appreciate, too, like how awesome it must be just to be hanging out with your buddies all day.
Yes.
Like, it's your job. There's a lot of just hanging out. I think the other part of it, too, though, is the thing that's really unique is that, you know, and I think a lot of people in the military or, you know, firefighters, people in professions like that can appreciate this. It's that you are hanging out with your buddies, but it's also in high pressure situations, performance industries, and, you know, in those two industries I mentioned, I'm not trying to compare, like, obviously your life is at risk in those industries.
Sure.
But there's a high performance element to it, to where, you know, you also, it's not just hanging out, it's like, man, just like Bregman helping out Hunter Brown with his sinker. Like, that's, you're actually also talking to your buddies about really critical stuff. And a kind of talk and shop in a way that you don't necessarily get on other jobs in the same environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's more formal. It's very unique. And yeah, you miss it when it's gone. No matter what you go into, it's hard to recapture that thing. That's why so many guys that you might think, like, gosh, why is that guy working coaching hours? He doesn't need the money. It's because they miss that whole environment,
you
know, like that, just being that complete immersion in something and being part of a team. It's hard to replace.
Very intoxicating, I would imagine. Yeah.
The thing about Andre that I do think, because I've heard him speak publicly a few times now in a kind of a speech environment, I think he's got a lot of potential at being a really good speech giver, which is important. Because as a Hall of Famer, those speaking opportunities increase exponentially.
Yes, they do.
Yeah,
yes,
and they
do.
If you can be the keynote speaker at a Fortune 500 company or something like that, that's a nice monthly salary.
Yeah.
And so I think if he works with a speechwriter or a public speaking firm, I think he could do very well at it, because you hear that he puts intonation into things. He's got that, like, immediately impressive voice.
Yes.
And that presence about him that I think he could be really, really, like, I think he could be an epic speech.
And more people know his story now. I know he's one of the most famous football players of all time, but I don't know that the average person outside of Houston, I think there's a lot of people in Houston that didn't know a lot of his personal story. We've learned a lot of it through all these articles and through that speech. And I think the one thing that's been hammered home that really translates to these speeches that you're talking about, I have not heard anybody gush about the work ethic of a player the way I've heard people gush about Andre Johnson in the last seven days. Like, just incredibly hard worker.
If he were to work with like somebody that specializes in giving keynote speeches and everything, if he's speaking to a Fortune 500 crowd, you do something to establish his credibility. They would show highlights of him or something, present him as this great football player. If he started with that story that we'll play later about getting a phone call from his sister that he didn't know he had when he was 21 years old, and then used that to go into, his journey in football and what he learned as a pro and everything. Yeah, he'd hit it out of the park.
For sure.
And he would increase your company's sales.
Yes.
You hear me?
By at least 20%.
Reach out to Andre's agent ASAP and book him before he's gone for your next corporate convention.
He will move you emotionally.
Right off vacation.
That's right. And help you achieve your goals and objectives. Yes. We'll have that audio about Andre's sister that he learned of, or at least talked to for the first time when he was 21 years old. We'll do that at 8:25 on the show today. John Harris joins us at 8 o'clock live from Ohio at Texans practice. I want to slip one more Hall of Famer in here, Seth, and I want you to close your eyes. This is Julius Peppers. Close your eyes for a second as you listen to this, and I swear this is what I feel like Will Anderson is going to sound like 20 years from now.
You can be a Hall of Fame dad, a Hall of Fame student, teacher, spouse, coworker, friend, whatever it is. Whatever it is that you do, do it with respect, integrity, passion, resilience, dedication, and gratitude. That alone will make you a Hall of Fame person, and you too can have a legacy that lives on forever. Thank you, and God bless.
I swear, he sounds exactly like Will sounds like an older version of Will Anderson right there. Julius
Peppers
does.
North Carolina. I was wondering if he was from Alabama, and that might be a little bit of it. But no, yeah, he does. Yeah. I would have, if you. It would take me a few seconds if you did guess the voice.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything at all. I would think it was Will Anderson.
And even the content of it. Those are all things Will Anderson would say.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, that's... Oh no, when he gave. I know not a lot of people watch this, but man, the end of the year press conference the day after the playoff loss, he basically gave a speech very similar to that to the press room about the importance of caring about everybody in the organization. It was really cool. It was one of the more motivational things I've heard.
Yeah. So there you go. So, man, that's like Julius Peppers is Will Anderson incarnate 20 years from now. Hopefully doing the exact same thing, giving a Hall of Fame speech.
Mm-hmm.
So that was so we acknowledged Julius Peppers. Did
acknowledge
I acknowledge him?
Me.
I don't think I even acknowledged him. So we acknowledge him. Yusei Kikuchi.
Acknowledge.
We acknowledge Yusei Kikuchi here. Had a good first start for the Astros. 5 2/3, 2 earned runs, 11 strikeouts, including 8 in a row. First guy to ever strike out 8 in a row in his first start for a new team. Rough start to it. Second pitch gave up a double. Fifth pitch gave up a kind of a Minute Maid home run. But nothing after that. I mean, after that, super dominant. Here was Joe Espada on Yusei Kikuchi.
He sat there down the stairs. You know, he had his notes, like a little boxer head down. He was locked in. It's pretty intense. I like it. I love it. He fits right in. He was mixing very well. He slider more in zone, where you saw a lot of chases, and then the changeup, I thought it was the game changer for me, because that's kind of what we want him to do. You throw that changeup more in zone, and it's a really, really good pitch. And then that just makes his fastball a much better pitch. So they were ready to hit fastballs early on. And then after that second inning came around, he's like, you know what, I'm going to start mixing some of my off-speed pitches. And, man, he couldn't be any better.
So the pitch selection meetings with him where they probably told him to throw more changeups, at first he said, bah, and then he got religion somewhere after he started having what would have been a really bad debut. I'm going to hold in reserve extreme excitement about it because, look, he ambushed the Rays a little bit with how much he was throwing his changeup, and the Rays had been a team that they've seen him a lot. And we'll see how it goes as more teams start to see that, okay, his pitch selection is going to be different. By the way, yeah, of course, Will Anderson's from outside Atlanta, not Alabama. So
yeah, went to Alabama. Yep. So Yusei Kikuchi, good start. Astros one game back in the standings, tied in the loss column. They get a chance to make up a half a game tonight. They play the Rangers. The Mariners are off. So the Astros will get a chance to gain a little bit of ground tonight in Arlington. Tyreek Hill.
Acknowledge me.
A few reasons to acknowledge Tyreek Hill. 99 rating on Madden. The only wide receiver with a 99 rating on Madden. That's a big deal to these guys. Number one in the NFL's top 100. That was a little surprising. I thought we were still living in Patrick Mahomes' world. But apparently, not only is Mahomes not number one, he's not even in the top three. Tyreek Hill, Christian McCaffrey, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. Interesting that Patrick Mahomes beat all those guys in the playoffs. Literally beat all of those guys in the playoffs.
Yeah. Tyreek Hill. I'm sorry. This is a devastating blow to your respect for this
BS, the NFL top 100?
BS ranking. But yes, yeah.
I kind of like it. It gets spicy. I like it. It creates conversation.
He wasn't that good. It wasn't. There's no criteria for this. It's not like the All-Star games or Pro Bowl where it's a regular season award. But for whatever it's worth, Pat Mahomes wasn't all that ethereal in the regular season last
year. That's true. Yep, that is true. Tyreek Hill also got paid this weekend. The new contract for Tyreek Hill, he got 3 years tacked onto his deal, $90 million, $65 million guaranteed. So they paid Jalen Waddle, they paid Tua Tagovailoa, and they paid Tyreek Hill again. This offseason. That's an interesting thing to me, Seth, real quick, is that this notion that you can't keep the weapons for a guy when you pay a quarterback. The Eagles paid Jalen Hurts, and they also paid A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith this offseason.
Yeah.
The Dolphins paid Tua Tagovailoa and paid both of his receivers top dollar.
I think that the one big thing that people are forgetting with all of that is that there was a huge salary cap expansion, and which is what all these agents are telling the teams to. Like, listen, it didn't go unnoticed.
Yeah.
There was a big old hike in the salary cap. So the Tyreek Hill one, I think it feels a little bit like smoke 'em while you got 'em. It's that, all right, if we're gonna use this cushion to try to create some labor peace here with Tyreek Hill for the next few years with our quarterback, this would be. Would we have loved to have gone out and get an extra free agent or something? Sure, but we gotta deal with keeping what we got.
Well, in theory, he kind of gave him a hometown deal. I mean, the market is $35 million right now. And even AJ Brown's making $32 million. Tyreek Hill gave them a hometown discount at $30 million a year right here.
Right. Well, you know, and part of it too is, I mean, like, I don't know, like, Tyreek Hill's situation is. Miami had some leverage over him as well.
That's true. He might have some imminent financial needs. Yes.
If I were to guess the one player in the NFL right now that would be the cautionary tale of, like, this guy made X amount of money in his career and now it's like, where did it all go?
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill, I mean, he's got a lot of mouths to feed, literally.
Someone said, but you'll notice with the Eagles and Dolphins, they did not pay for running backs in the same way. What the hell are you talking about? The Eagles signed Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. To
$13 million a year deal. Yes, they did. They did pay a running back as well in Philadelphia. God, who else is getting the money in Philly now with Saquon, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Hurts eating up half the cap? That's
not
crazy.
Not their cornerbacks.
No. Yeah. Last one, Brandon Jacobs.
Acknowledge me.
You're wondering why I'm acknowledging a running back who has long since retired from the NFL, but he had a hell of a story on the Raw Room podcast that surfaced over the weekend. Here was Brandon Jacobs telling a story about a chemically enhanced performance that he had back in high school.
It was one of my homeboys that graduated the year before me. I was walking into the weight room. He said, hey, guess what I got? What you got? I got that white girl. I'm like, oh, for real? You want to try? I'm like, yeah.
Pause real quick. He snorted a line of coke before the game. Yeah.
It sounded like he said that white girl.
He did. I think that's code for cocaine. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Sure. I'm going to pretend I didn't know that.
Continue.
What game was it? What was the game? Right. I was saying, what was the game?
338, full touchdowns. Killed it. I destroyed it. I destroyed it. It was easy. I felt like I was the only one out there.
Nah.
I ain't never did it again.
I
should have did it again.
He ran for, if you missed it amidst all the chatter there, he ran for 338 yards and four touchdowns after snorting a line of Coke before a high school game.
Kids, I would remind you
that don't do
he
it.
Probably ran for 338 plus yards 17 times.
He was twice the size of everybody on the field. He was a big running back in the NFL, Brandon Jacobs.
And in the long history of athletes doing cocaine, there include quite a few overdoses, heart explosions, or just sad stories.
Yes, like that's not the norm.
Lawrence Taylor and what have you.
Not the norm. Not the norm.
You got any good stories about guys improving their performance with steroids? You want to play for the kids, Sean?
I just thought it was a funny story. I just thought it was a funny delivery. I like the very end where he's like, I should have done it again.
And again, and again, and again. I need more.
Like I did right before this podcast.
That's the problem with drugs. Yeah, to speak frankly, that's the problem with drugs is they work.
Yeah.
But right up until they don't, and your life craters into nothingness.
That's right. Yeah. Do as Brandon Jacobs. No, don't do anything Brandon Jacobs.
Don't
do as he do says, once, like not as Brandon I do. Jacobs I painted Pendergast with you. That was acknowledge me. We acknowledge the big performances and both this past weekend and back in high school. Under the influence of street drugs.
But first, Sean's got an endorsement for drugs.
No.
I'd love to sell you on cocaine.
A minute for my friends at Molly. all right, that was acknowledge me. Hey, you know who bleeping loves the Houston Texans? Lewis Riddick. This is the most bullish I've heard any media member about the Houston Texans and the biggest reason why he thinks they have got Super Bowl potential this year.
I'm going to fact check him on this one. He's got some erroneous things in here. But
good deal.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. John Harris joins us at the top of the hour. He's in Ohio. The Texans are in Cleveland, Chagrin Falls to be exact, Ohio over the next 3 days to practice leading up to Friday night's game against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. We'll have that for you here on Sports Radio 610. Lewis Riddick, man, he loves the Texans, and it's slightly ironic, I would say, Seth, in so much as he was one of the candidates back in 2021 for the job that eventually went to Nick Caserio.
And I remember there was some, at times it felt like, all right, some of his takes about the Texans, it felt like they might have a little bit of sour grapes to them,
yes.
Or kind of like, you see what happens. Ever since D'Amico took the job, as far as I can remember, I think he was very bullish on D'Amico from the beginning. Yeah. And I think maybe skeptical of what the Texans organization would do with him. But they, like all last season, he's been very bullish on the Texans. Once he saw that D'Amico was able to have an influence and that he wasn't hamstrung by whatever, he's been very bullish on them.
Yeah. So here, Lewis Riddick on ESPN late last week went through defense, offense, coaching in his discussion of the Texans. And again, this is as positive as I've heard any media member. And there are a slew of media members out there who are very positive about the Texans. I've not heard anybody say this about the Texans' defense this coming season.
Who is the team that right now you're saying, well, I got to see it in order to believe it. But who do you believe it that they have the right stuff before you actually see it? I think the Texans are that. And I'll tell you why. Look, I think their roster, when you look at it 1 through 53, their defense is going to be a top two, top three defense in the NFL. Okay, D'Amico Autry being suspended for the first 6 games, that hurts him. No question, because he's one of the most versatile inside-outside pass rushers in the NFL. Bart, you know that. You know that better than anybody, how important guys like that are. But this team can rush the passer. They were number 2, I believe, in the NFL in pass rush win rate as a team last year. They've got horses, man, and they're going to be even better this year. Their second and third level is as good as anyone's on defense.
Okay. I mean, that is a lot of hyperbole right there.
The second and third level, I think, is where I would question exactly just how good they are. Now, I think Riddick probably knows about Christian Harris, where not a lot of people still really know about Christian Harris, and probably knows that his second half of the season was just completely different than the first half of his season. So that the potential of Alshire and Christian Harris as the two linebackers who are on the field most of the time, you know, they only use a third linebacker. They're in nickel most of the time.
Yeah.
The secondary, it's a futures bet on Lassiter, and I feel very good about Lassiter right now. But the safety position, you know, I think there's a lot of teams with better safety situations right now. So I don't know about that. But every team out there has question marks at position.
Sure.
You look at the top defenses from last year, Baltimore, San Francisco, Dallas. You know, like Dallas had huge glaring issues when it came to the playoffs. You know, they lack size. There's questions there. So I think on the balance sheet, the weaponry that they added just offsets some of my concerns. So the Texans finished 12th in total DVOA last year.
Defensive
efficiency. Yeah. It's not that much of a leap to be the top three, but it's really, really, really going to hinge on the pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
And not having DeNico Autry in the first six games, it's not the end of the world, but in terms of being genuinely elite, I think that does hurt.
Yeah.
So it'll be an evolution throughout the season. I'm not as concerned about the defensive tackle position as I know a lot of people are, especially when DeNico Autry comes back. So I don't think it's a pie in the sky notion.
I think they
could definitely be right up there in that top five conversation already.
If they have a top three defense against this schedule, DeMeco Ryans is coach of the year.
That's a really good point. They face a slew of quarterbacks.
Dude, yeah. I mean, I don't know if Lewis Riddick could look that deep in his analysis to put that take out there.
Well, and part of it, too, is like, okay, what do you win for being a top three defense? There's teams that are built for the playoffs, and there's teams that aren't built for the playoffs. San Francisco, you know, despite the fact they made the Super Bowl, there were flaws in their defense. Their run defense was not as good as they looked on paper. Some of what San Francisco was statistically was based on how good their offense mm-hmm. was, but they had flaws. Cleveland was one of the better defenses in the league last year, and it certainly didn't help them in the playoffs versus the Texans.
No.
So, I'm not as fixated on them being a statistically top three. I just want them to be a very well-rounded defense.
Yeah, stylistically, you know, yeah.
In that they can stop the run when they absolutely need to stop the run while still rushing. The pass rush is going to be there. I trust that. It's can you stop the run when you absolutely have to stop the run?
Yep. Here's Lewis Riddick on the offense for the Texans.
Offensively, CJ is going to take the next. CJ is going to continue to surprise with just how poised and well beyond his years this young man is. The offensive line is solid. It's not great. It's solid. They need to be better running the football, especially in the red area. And they've already said down there that Stephon Diggs has looked spectacular. They can't cover him. And you know that he's not the only guy with Nico and Tank, who they also got on the perimeter.
You know what? The first time I listened through that, I had missed the red zone part that he had said. I was going to fact check him on the running game. He acknowledges that they have to get better in the red zone, and that is all about the run game. Like all that awesome stuff you do with the play action doesn't really help you much up when everything's compressed and the linebackers don't have to cover as much area and the defensive backs can play zone. That's the key to this being a genuinely elite offense, is that they have to be able to run the ball. And that doesn't mean, even if Bobby Slowick moved away from being so heavily play action, you still have to take those rushing opportunities when you're facing a light box. And the Texans did see that last year, but they just couldn't capitalize on mm-hmm. it. You know, the Panthers game, when the Texans faced good defenses last year, it was really as simple as that. When the offense really showed its blemishes, it's when they faced good defenses and teams could sit in a shell and let the front seven of the defense take care of the run. It's hard to get anything accomplished in that way. So they've got to, whether they're a heavy running football team or not, you have to be able to take advantage of those opportunities. And that's the huge factor for whether this is an elite offense or not.
That'll be
the passing game will be there.
Yeah, that'll be one of the things I'm hoping to hear from practices this week, is that Joe Mixon is back on the field. You know, like, they got to get Mixon back incorporated into this thing.
I did think, though, that one of the more promising, one of the more encouraging things about the Hall of Fame game was that your starting center and starting left guard were playing against backups, yes, but a lot of the time they look like it should look when you have starters playing against backups.
Yes.
They were cohesive. The timing was good. They were moving up to the linebackers while another guy took over the defensive lineman, like all that stuff you want to see. And some of the bad run plays, unlike last year, you could clearly pin it on the running back decisions.
Yep.
You know, like last year there was a whole lot of like, I don't think the running back was doing well, but I can't really tell because the blocking was really bad too.
Yeah, blocking was good. Man, seeing Kenyon Green get up on the next level and get on some linebackers was really cool to see. Like, okay,
yeah,
that's why they drafted him. Yeah. Last one from Riddick. And, man, he loves him some D'Amico Ryans.
Here's the key, though, for me, why they're going to take the next step. D'Amico Ryans is one of the best leaders we've ever seen in the NFL. He's one of the best leaders in the NFL as a player. He will go down when it's all said and done as one of the best head coaches in history in terms of his leadership ability. The guy commands everyone that he comes into contact with. Not in a threatening way, not in a I'm bigger, better, stronger than you way, but in a competency way. You feel his competence. You feel the impact that he has on you in terms of how he makes you feel. And he's doing that for that franchise. I would have not bet on the Texans to be as good as they were last year. I would have bet my whole life savings on it and lost everything because I underestimated, wrongfully, just how strong that man is. The Texans are for real. And even though everybody knows they're coming this year, they're still going to do what they need to do.
It's one of the hardest things to judge when you're choosing a head coach, because a lot of times you're choosing a guy that's never been in that position before. And I understand why there's such a heavy bias towards taking offensive-minded coaches, because it's a nice hedge. It's an, okay, maybe the guy isn't a great leader, but at least we could have a good offense, Matt LaFleur. And it's Mike McCarthy. And it's one of those things that you can justify it and you can explain it, but you just don't know it until you see it. And when it comes to the all-time great coaches, just look at the best coaches of the past century or of this century. You know, if you had gone into it thinking like, nah, I can't hire Pete Carroll, defensive-minded head coach. Nah, I can't hire Bill Belichick, defensive-minded head coach. Nah, can't hire Mike Tomlin, defensive-minded head coach. Nah, can't hire John Harbaugh, special teams coach. Go back to Marv Levy. Nah, got to get an offensive-minded head coach. He was a special teams guy. You're not hiring a coordinator. It's a nice hedge if you're a wimp, but what you should be doing is looking for actual leaders and guys who can actually instill a culture. And I think they struck gold with D'Amico.
Did they ever? Yeah, that part of the take, now you could tell, you see Lewis Riddick kind of stopping himself a little bit. He will be one of the greatest head coaches in terms of leadership. You know, like it's one season in, we got to pause a little bit.
You're not going to get credit for the leadership if you don't.
If you don't win,
there's only one Bill Snyder. Yeah. After that, they used it up on Bill Snyder. That's the only coach that can get credit for leadership without actually winning anything of substance.
That's right. Going two and nine his first 10 years or whatever it was. Yeah. John Harris, Texan sideline reporter, footballtakeover.com. Y'all know Johnny, a part of Texans All Access as well. He's live in Ohio. The Texans are practicing in the Cleveland area this week. Johnny is going to join us live from Texans practice coming up next.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. John Harris joins us at the top of the hour. He's in Ohio. The Texans are in Cleveland, Chagrin Falls to be exact, Ohio over the next 3 days to practice leading up to Friday night's game against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. We'll have that for you here on Sports Radio 610. Lewis Riddick. Man, he loves the Texans, and it's slightly ironic, I would say, Seth, in so much as he was one of the candidates back in 2021 for the job that eventually went to Nick Caserio.
Yeah, well, and I remember there was some, at times it felt like, all right, some of his takes about the Texans, it felt like they might have a little bit of sour grapes to them,
yes.
Or kind of like, you see what happens. Ever since D'Amico took the job, as far as I can remember, I think he was very bullish on D'Amico from the beginning. Yeah. And I think maybe skeptical of what the Texans organization would do with him. But they, like all last season, he's been very bullish on the Texans.
Very
ever
much.
Since once he saw that D'Amico was able to have an influence and that he wasn't hamstrung by whatever, he's been very bullish on them.
Yeah, so here, Lewis Riddick on ESPN late last week went through defense, offense, coaching in his discussion of the Texans. And again, this is as positive as I've heard any media member. And there are a slew of media members out there who are very positive about the Texans. I've not heard anybody say this about the Texans' defense this coming season.
Who is the team that right now you're saying, well, I got to see it in order to believe it. But who do you believe it that they have the right stuff before you actually see it? I think the Texans are that. And I'll tell you why. Look, I think their roster, when you look at it 1 through 53, their defense is going to be a top two, top three defense in the NFL. Okay, D'Amico Autry being suspended for the first six games, that hurts him. No question, because he's one of the most versatile inside-outside pass rushers in the NFL. Bart, you know that. You know that better than anybody, how important guys like that are. But this team can rush the passer. They were number two, I believe, in the NFL in pass rush win rate as a team last year. They've got horses, man, and they're going to be even better this year. Their second and third level is as good as anyone's on defense.
Okay. I mean, that is a lot of hyperbole right there.
The second and third level, I think, is where I would question exactly just how good they are. Now, I think Riddick probably knows about Christian Harris, where not a lot of people still really know about Christian Harris, and probably knows that his second half of the season was just completely different than the first half of his season. So that the potential of Alshire and Christian Harris as the two linebackers who are on the field most of the time, you know, they only use a third linebacker. They're in nickel most of the time.
Yeah.
The secondary, it's a futures bet on Lassiter, and I feel very good about Lassiter right now. But the safety position, you know, I think there's a lot of teams with better safety situations right now. So I don't know about that. But every team out there has question marks at position.
Sure.
You look at the top defenses from last year, Baltimore, San Francisco, Dallas. You know, like Dallas had huge glaring issues when it came to the playoffs. You know, they lack size. There's questions there. So I think on the balance sheet, the weaponry that they added just offsets some of my concerns. So the Texans finished 12th in total DVOA last year.
Defensive
efficiency. Yeah. It's not that much of a leap to be the top three, but it's really, really, really going to hinge on the pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
And not having D'Amico Autry in the first six games, it's not the end of the world, but in terms of being genuinely elite, I think that does hurt.
Yeah.
So it'll be an evolution throughout the season. I'm not as concerned about the defensive tackle position as I know a lot of people are, especially when Danico Autry comes back. So I don't think it's a pie in the sky notion.
I think they
could definitely be right up there in that top five conversation already.
If they have a top three defense against this schedule, D'Amico Ryans is coach of the year.
That's a really good point. They face a slew of quarterbacks.
Dude, yeah. I mean, I don't know if Lewis Riddick had looked that deep in his analysis to put that take out there. You know?
And part of it, too, is like, okay, what do you win for being a top three defense? There's teams that are built for the playoffs, and there's teams that aren't built for the playoffs. San Francisco, you know, despite the fact they made the Super Bowl, there were flaws in their defense. Their run defense was not as good as they looked on paper. Some of what San Francisco was statistically was based on how good their offense mm-hmm. was, but they had flaws. Cleveland was one of the better defenses in the league last year, and it certainly didn't help them in the playoffs versus the Texans.
No.
So, I'm not as fixated on them being a statistically top three. I just want them to be a very well-rounded
yeah,
defense.
Yeah, stylistically, you know, yeah.
In that they can stop the run when they absolutely need to stop the run while still rushing. The pass rush is going to be there, I trust that. It's can you stop the run when you absolutely have to stop the run?
Yep. Here's Lewis Riddick on the offense for the Texans.
Offensively, CJ is going to take the next. CJ is going to continue to surprise with just how poised and well beyond his years this young man is. The offensive line is solid. It's not great. It's solid. They need to be better running the football, especially in the red area. And they've already said down there that Stephon Diggs has looked spectacular. They can't cover him. And you know that okay. He's not the only guy with Nico and Tank, who they also got on the perimeter.
You know what? The first time I listened through that, I had missed the red zone part that he had said. I was going to fact check him on the running game. He acknowledges that they have to get better in the red zone, and that is all about the run game. Like all that awesome stuff you do with the play action doesn't really help you much up when everything's compressed and the linebackers don't have to cover as much area and the defensive backs can play zone. That's the key to this being a genuinely elite offense, is that they have to be able to run the ball. And that doesn't mean, even if Bobby Slowick moved away from being so heavily play action, you still have to take those rushing opportunities when you're facing a light box. And the Texans did see that last year, but they just couldn't capitalize on mm-hmm. it. You know, the Panthers game, when the Texans faced good defenses last year, it was really as simple as that. When the offense really showed its blemishes, it's when they faced good defenses and teams could sit in a shell and let the front seven of the defense take care of the run. It's hard to get anything accomplished in that way. So they've got to, whether they're a heavy running football team or not, you have to be able to take advantage of those opportunities. And that's the huge factor for whether this is an elite offense or not.
That'll be one of
the passing game will be there.
Yeah, that'll be one of the things I'm hoping to hear from practices this week, is that Joe Mixon is back on the field. You know, like, yeah. They got to get Mixon back incorporated into this thing.
I did think, though, that one of the more promising, one of the more encouraging things about the Hall of Fame game was that your starting center and starting left guard were playing against backups, yes, but a lot of the time they looked like it should look when you have starters playing against backups.
Yes.
They were cohesive, the timing was good, they were moving up to the linebackers while another guy took over the defensive lineman, like all that stuff you want to see. And some of the bad run plays, unlike last year, you could clearly pin it on the running back decisions.
Yep.
You know, like last year there was a whole lot of like, I don't think the running back was doing well, but I can't really tell because the blocking was really bad too.
Yeah, blocking was good. Man, seeing Kenyon Green get up on the next level and get on some linebackers was really cool to see. Like, okay,
yeah,
that's why they drafted him. Yeah. Last one from Riddick. And, man, he loves him some D'Amico Ryans.
Here's the key, though, for me, why they're going to take the next step. D'Amico Ryans is one of the best leaders we've ever seen in the NFL. He's one of the best leaders in the NFL as a player. He will go down when it's all said and done as one of the best head coaches in history in terms of his leadership ability. The guy commands everyone that he comes into contact with. Not in a threatening way. Not in a I'm bigger, better, stronger than you way. But in a competency way. You feel his competence. You feel the impact that he has on you in terms of how he makes you feel. And he's doing that for that franchise. I would have not bet on the Texans to be as good as they were last year. I would have bet my whole life savings on it and lost everything because I underestimated, wrongfully, just how strong that man is. The Texans are for real. And even though everybody knows they're coming this year, they're still going to do what they need to do.
It's one of the hardest things to judge when you're choosing a head coach, because a lot of times you're choosing a guy that's never been in that position before. And I understand why there's such a heavy bias towards taking offensive-minded coaches, because it's a nice hedge. It's an, okay, maybe the guy isn't a great leader, but at least we could have a good offense, Matt LaFleur. And it's Mike McCarthy. And it's one of those things that you can justify it and you can explain it, but you just don't know it until you see it. And when it comes to the all-time great coaches, just look at the best coaches of the past century or of this century. You know, if you had gone into it thinking like, nah, I can't hire Pete Carroll, defensive-minded head coach. Nah, I can't hire Bill Belichick, defensive-minded head coach. Nah, can't hire Mike Tomlin, defensive-minded head coach. Nah, can't hire John Harbaugh, special teams coach. Go back to Marv Levy. Nah, got to get an offensive-minded head coach. He was a special teams guy. You're not hiring a coordinator. It's a nice hedge if you're a wimp, but what you should be doing is looking for actual leaders and guys who can actually instill a culture. And I think they struck gold with DeMeco.
Did they ever? Yeah, that part of the take, you could tell, you see Lewis Riddick kind of stopping himself a little bit. He will be one of the greatest head coaches in terms of leadership. You know, like, it's one season in, we got to pause a little bit.
You're not going to get credit for the leadership if you don't.
If you don't win.
There's only one Bill Snyder. Yeah. After that, they used it up on Bill Snyder. That's the only coach that can get credit for leadership without actually winning anything of substance.
That's right. Going two and nine his first 10 years or whatever it was. Yeah. John Harris, Texan sideline reporter, footballtakeover.com. Y'all know Johnny, a part of Texans All Access as well. He's live in Ohio. The Texans are practicing in the Cleveland area this week. Johnny is going to join us live from Texans practice coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.